What is good, everybody? Welcome to another installment of Prospects Overload. It has been a very, very long time. But, you know, with school start, well, finally finished. First year university started for me, and a bunch of other stuff was happening in my life. But today is the day we finally come back for a Prospects Overload. I am your host, as always. I'm not going to call myself lovely and talented, but I am your host, Drake Mann. You can follow me on Twitter at DrakeMann4. And as always, I have my co-host, who has the boo sound effect, because we need that. Austin Farmer. Austin, say hi.
What's up, everybody? Like Drake said, it has been a very long time. Life has just gotten in the way, but we're back at it now, and this should be a really fun episode. We've got our guest speaker, or I don't know how to describe him, but he's one of our very good writers, Mr. Michael Murray. If you want to introduce yourself, Michael.
What's going on, everybody? Good to be back. Good to be back chatting here with Drake and Austin. I guess I'll plug my Twitter too. It's at Michael Murray J. I tweet a lot of shit about the Red Sox and not much else. So give me a follow.
All right, Austin, make sure to bleep that out. But hey, I love it. I love the enthusiasm. I love it because we were supposed to have the clapping noise when Michael came into the, when he started talking, and the boo noise whenever Austin was talking. But anyway, I digress. Because we haven't done this in a long time, I thought that we'd start with almost everyone's favorite stat of the day. This is going to be a long one. So what I thought that we'd do is we'll start with low A, high A, and double A. We're going to skip anything below low A, and we're going to skip triple A because triple A is where all the bums play. But that is a nice way of putting it. But for the stat of the day, we got highest weighted runs created plus among qualified hitters at each level. So for low A, we'll start off with Jason Chirio of Cleveland Guardians at 144, Caden Connor of the Chicago White Sox at 143, Blake Mitchell with Kansas City at 141, Aiden Smith with Tampa Bay at 139, and I'm going to say this name wrong, but Riku Nishida with the White Sox at 138. Now, before I go into some other names, do you guys want to tackle any of those top five right there?
Michael, you want to go first?
I can start us off. I mean, I'll start with Blake Mitchell. Obviously, a very household name, especially in the Royals system. But really, really like this guy. I think the offensive profile is there, especially for a guy that's still obviously very young and very early on in the process. But, you know, you just watch his at-bats, and it's a real smooth path. And, you know, the barrel stays in there a long time. The mechanics are really solid, so not surprising at all to see him on this list.
Austin, go ahead. And I think I know who you're going to talk about because we've actually seen him live in person, but go ahead and with your thoughts, and I'll say something about mine.
Yeah. If you were thinking that I was going to talk about Aiden Smith, you would be correct. We both saw him out at ACL. I really liked him. I think we saw him for what, 4 games out there with the Mariners back when he was a Mariners prospect. I thought the hit tool really projected well. You know, he was taking professional ABs. He wasn't trying to sell out for power. So to see him on this list, it is somewhat of a surprise because I didn't really see that power, but he did manage to climb his way onto this list. And I think that the trajectory for Smith is in a really good direction, especially now that he's in Tampa Bay system. Not that the Mariners system was going to hold him back or anything, but I think that it's a bit of an extra boost with how they develop prospects.
Yeah, totally, Austin. And I like what Michael had to say about Blake Mitchell. I was really hoping to see him live, but unfortunately he skipped Complex League, or he was maybe out here for a week or something, but I wasn't able to watch him. But overall, this is a pretty solid list. I've personally never seen Caden Connor or Riku Nishida, but I do want to talk about Jason Chirio. I've talked about Jason Chirio multiple times on this show. I've said that he has about the same talent as his brother. If you guys, for those of you that don't know, his brother is Jackson Chirio, who was just third place in Rookie of the Year voting, which was insane to me because he was what, 19 or 20 years old in
2020?
Yeah.
At 19. Any other year, he would have won it.
Yeah, no. I don't know, because there have been some pretty outstanding players, rookies. But I do want to mention something on Aiden Smith with the Rays got him for Randy Arozarena. And we have had a take here at Prospects Worldwide earlier between Austin and Caden Smith. Not Caden.
Caden Smith.
I don't know why I said Caden Smith, but Austin and Caden, that they think that Randy Arozarena would be out of baseball in 5 years. And that was what, 2 years ago?
Something like that. And if you look, you know, he's a really good postseason performer, which is what matters essentially. But personally, in my opinion, at least, he's a league average player overall. Like, he does bring some power and speed, but he strikes out a bunch and he does get caught stealing some. And I just don't like his approach overall. I think that he could burn. I'm not saying that he will, but I do think that there's still a possibility he burns out and just ends up doing nothing in a few seasons. Like, I'm not saying that it's going to happen, because I think he's doing better than what Caden and I thought. But I think that the expectations after that postseason really carried a lot of his hype and everything that people were expecting him to be the next big thing. And I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I'm not saying he's a star either. So I do think that there still is a lot more people that overrate him, is what I'll say.
I would agree with that.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And other names, I just put a couple more that fans would probably recognize. Christian Hernandez of the Cubs had a 135. Ralphie Velasquez of the Guardians, 131. Alfonsín Rosario, another Guardians guy that got traded from the Cubs, 127. Akedri Vargas of the Marlins, traded by Texas. Austin, you remember Akedri. Drew Jones from Arizona at 125. Arjun Nimala from Toronto at 121, and Austin Charles at 121 as well, and he's from Kansas City. And it's pretty interesting for me, because I've seen at least three of these guys in this list live at Complex League, and Christian Hernandez, Akedri Vargas, and Austin Charles. And I know Christian Hernandez has lost a lot of prospect status. Like, he has struggled a lot. Akedri Vargas, people are starting to underrate him with this trade of Jake Berger. Akedri Vargas was, in my opinion, the main piece, and he is among one of my favorite prospects. And Austin Charles is a really tall dude. Like, he's a really tall shortstop prospect.
I think he's like 6'6".
Yeah, no, he's a tall shortstop. The bat has been, you know, developing slower than the defense, but overall he should be a pretty solid contributor going forward. Do you guys have anybody you want to talk about there?
I will talk about I think it's pronounced Akedri Vargas. I could be wrong though, but I do think that people are undervaluing him, just because I don't think he's as known baseball wide. I don't think he's well known. I think people that have seen him are high on him, but I think the average everyday fan that, you know, doesn't really follow prospects as much. I didn't see what his numbers were, but I know that he has been climbing up the system. He was climbing up the Rangers system a bit. He had a decent low A season from what I remember, but I didn't see his final numbers. And I think people have probably looked too much into that, as they always do. They always look into minor league numbers way too much, but I think the projection is very much there. He's like, what, 19 years old? And now that he's in Miami, I think that he definitely would have developed into a regular with Texas, but with some blockage there. I'm not sure if he would have stayed with the Rangers anyway, but now that he is with the Marlins, I do think that it's a very clear pathway of him becoming an everyday player with the Marlins, who should hit at least 20 home runs, hit, you know, a 55 hit tool. I know you're much higher on the power than I am with the Akedri. I know you saw more of him than I did at ACL, but I think that people just are underrating him just because they don't know as much about him compared to the other pieces of the trade.
or they just look at the stats, which don't do that if you are a person, you know, get the eye test in there as well. But
Literally Michael, anybody every scout here? I've ever spoken to has said that stats don't matter. So
Michael, anybody here you want to talk about, or you want to move on to high A?
Let's go on to high A, because there's definitely a few guys there that I would love to share some thoughts about.
Okay, perfect. So high A now. Now, the reason why we have more players than in this top five is we have a couple ties. So that's why I was trying to put them in there. But high A, we got Braden Taylor of Tampa Bay at 154. Luke Adams with Milwaukee at 154. Ricardo Olivar. I said that wrong, but that's fine. With Minnesota at 150. Kyle Karros of Colorado at 145. Will Simpson, who was just traded to Tampa Bay at 142. Cooper Kinney, who's with Tampa Bay at 137. And Carter Jensen, who's with Kansas City at 137. Michael, I'll go back to you. Who do you want to talk about there?
Well, actually, the two names I had in my eye on are actually in the, I guess we'll call it the honorable mentions section, which I think we'll get to second. So I will defer to Austin first.
All right. Well, the guy that I am most familiar with on this list would be Braden Taylor. I did see him a bit at TCU. And honestly, the hit tool I felt was very underwhelming considering the reputation that he had for it. I do think that the bat plays. I think the power is nice. He's got pretty good exit velos. He's got a pretty nice swing overall, I would say. Defense is not bad. It's not plus or anything. I think that he'll be a good third baseman, just nothing flashy. He does have a good arm at third, but he definitely is a power over hit profile. In my opinion, I think that he has 55 power. So to see him at the top of this list is not a shocker to me, but yeah, he is the player that I'm most familiar with. I know Drake, you and I were both high on Carter Jensen back in like 2022, I think it was. And he did have a bit of a, not downfall, like he slid some for prospect status last year, so it is nice to see him climb his way back up a bit and be on this list.
See, I want to talk about Carter Jensen, but I got to talk about Luke Adams. Luke and I go way back. Not really, but I was the one that caught his first professional bomb at Complex League, and since then I've been tracking his development. He's been absolutely, the power's there. The hit tool has kind of, I don't want to say decimated, but it's kind of like been exposed a little bit. But he is pretty young, because I think he ended last year at Double A at like 20. But the power's there. I fully expect him. His power's in play extremely well with Milwaukee in that stadium. Oh man, he'll have some nice over the fence power at some point. And can we just mention one thing here? Tampa Bay. Again, so out of the, what, like 10 prospects that we've talked about?
They have three guys.
Four, because you got
four guys.
Then you got Will Simpson, Cooper Kinney, and Braden Taylor.
Hey, you know what I just realized?
What?
If Will Simpson and Chandler Simpson both make the Rays, do you know how many Simpsons memes are going to be thrown around?
Oh, Austin. That's a good point, but I know Michael over there, seeing all these Tampa Bay prospects, he must be shaking in his boots over there, over the Boston Red Sox. But
is it a little threatening? For sure, but at the same time, am I really surprised? No, I mean, this is what Tampa Bay does. They go out and find guys, and they're, you know, that. Their player development, the pipeline they got going there is really something special. So really no surprise to see so many Tampa guys filling up these lists. And no doubt in my mind that one of them is probably going to break my heart in about 2028 or 2029.
You want to spill the beans?
Wait, who are you talking to?
Michael. Which prospect are you talking about?
Oh, none in particular. I mean, I think they all could. I think it was just more of a...
you were generalizing. My bad.
Yeah, just a generalization. And the other thing, too, going back to Luke Adams really quick, Dre, I'm not sure the last time you saw, I don't know if you saw him this year or anything, but I remember seeing some older videos of him, and the mechanics in the box were not the prettiest, if I must be honest.
I agree with you.
It's very choppy, and I know there was a very, very hefty leg kick. Definitely a guy, like you said, that is very power over hit tool.
Yeah, I mean, I remember him very vividly because of the first professional bomb and stuff like that. But he does have like this little like a bat twirl. He does something really weird with his bat before the pitch comes. And it's very reminiscent to another guy that I saw this year. And I know Austin saw it as well.
The bat load you're talking about.
Bat load, yeah. Bat load, sorry. But Maxton Martin of the Rangers had something very similar with like a big leg kick, a bat wiggle or bat load. And by the end of ACL, he kind of got rid of the leg kick, which is really interesting to me.
Yeah, because I don't remember seeing that leg kick that bad. I remember it was like a small leg kick, but I don't remember seeing a leg kick when I was there at ACL.
Yeah, but the Brewers are another team that they take guys like Luke Adams and a bunch of other guys and just make them shine. Like we back-to-back complex leagues, they've had draft guys out here that have just absolutely shined, like Dylan O'Rey and Josh Adam Josh Adamkowski. Yeah, I can't speak today. But anyway, let's go to the names outside. And there is a Red Sox prospect here for my boy Michael over there. But Brian Gonzalez with Boston had a 136. Cole Carrig at 132. Tayron Lorenzo. Austin, I know I said that wrong, so just keep your mouth shut. 130 with Detroit. Colton Ledbetter at Tampa Bay at 130. Cam Collier at Cincinnati. With 129 and Henry Mendez at 127. Michael, I'll let you take it away from here.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, of course, Brian Gonzalez is the name that caught my eye, and he kind of came on my radar, you know, obviously specifically the Red Sox prospects late in the season. But you watch his swing, and he's got a, you know, it's an open stance and does a great job, you know, driving through the ball. He's got there's a ton of pop in the bat, so it's no surprise to see him this high on this list for WRC plus. And I think if you watch his swing, I think there's even more there. He almost with his back leg, it almost looks like when he swings, he almost like slips and his back leg kind of falls out from underneath him. And I think if he could work, you know, I think if he can get that to really kind of drive that back leg and really get into that back hip, I think there's even more power in his bat. Another, you know, power over hit guy, but there's the potential there for a lot of power. And he's a big frame in the box. So this is a guy definitely to keep my eye on in the Red Sox system. And then the other guy too, I was just going to quickly mention, is Ledbetter, another Tampa Bay guy, funny enough. I like his mechanics. It's a very, you know, heavy uppercut swing, obviously, you know, kind of selling out for power there. But I think there's definitely some more projectability, especially if he can kind of tone down the bat path a little bit. But overall, I think smooth mechanics and another guy that I enjoy watching.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And Austin, I know that there's a couple guys on this list that you are personally high on. I think you were pretty high on Ledbetter as well. But I'll let you explain a little bit more on, at least I know one guy here.
Yeah, so I did like Ledbetter coming up through the draft. I didn't really see that many games of his, but I did watch a lot of clips and I caught a few games. So I did like the profile. I just didn't see enough to really develop a feel for his game. But the main guy I'm going to talk about here will be Tayron Lorenzo. He's the guy that I first saw when he was in low A Rancho Cucamonga with the Dodgers back in the day. I think it was last year when I saw him. And I think I was higher on him at the beginning before most people were. I think there were some people that liked him, but the profile wasn't really quite there. I did think that he had some pop in his bat for a catcher. You know, I wasn't a big fan of his hit tool, but I think that there was enough there that he would develop and climb through the system at a healthy pace. And I did think that his defense behind the plate wasn't terrible. It wasn't good, but it wasn't, I don't want to say bad, but it was, I would say it was 45 defense from what I saw. He moved okay, but there were some times where he was kind of not the best blocker behind the plate. But once he got traded to Detroit and then the AFL this November, he really took off and he was crushing the ball. And now that he had a strong AFL, his reputation has really taken off for the most part. And a lot of Tigers fans are high on him. And I do think that they have reason to be high on him, but I will say that I still think that he doesn't have the potential to be like a star player like a lot of people are starting to think now. I think he's a regular with Detroit. But yeah, that's going to be what my take on Lorenzo. And the next guy that I'm going to talk about will be a shorter summary, but Cole Carrick. I remember seeing him right after the draft when he got taken by Colorado. I saw him for about a few weeks worth of low A streams on MILB TV with Fresno. And I didn't know how I liked the bat profile, so I am pleasantly surprised to see him on this list. I didn't know if there was enough in the bat profile, but what really stood out about Carrick was he's a decent athlete, but he had a lot of defensive versatility and he had good defense at most of the positions he played. Like I think during the time he was with Fresno, I saw him catch at least once. I saw him play center field. I saw him play right field. I want to say I saw him play third base and I saw him play shortstop. So if he can play multiple positions while even having a decent bat profile, there's value there with Carrick.
Yeah, that's interesting because I remember watching Cole Carrick when he was at San Diego State when they came out and faced, I think it was some type of tournament out here, but San Diego State was out here and I saw him and he looked pretty good. I haven't seen him since, but I want to go back to your point on Theron Lorenzo. I disagree. I think that he does have star potential. I mean, he already has confidence. He already has the bat. I mean, like from what I saw from Arizona Fall League, the dude laced a base hit into center and then bat flipped. It was kind of crazy. It was hilarious, but I do think that for a catcher, you don't really need to hit. I know that you were talking about his defense. His arm is great. His defense is still average-ish at best, but
it's fringe.
I do think that he does have a little bit more in the tank than what you're giving him credit for. And also, one pleasant surprise to me is Henry Mendez, because I remember watching him at Arizona Complex League, and I thought, oh my God, this guy's going to be a stud. He's going to keep going. Like the hit tool is there, and he was, I think, 17 at the time, and he like struggled for a year and a half or 2 years, and then he got traded to the Phillies, and now he's finally starting to show up, which is really, really nice, and I really hope that he continues to rise, because I really was high on him at some point during Arizona Complex League. Okay, so let's move on to Double A now. This is our last portion of Stat of the Day, and this should be a part that Michael likes more than anybody, because he gets to gush over one of the best prospects, or if not the best prospect in the Red Sox system. But Double A, Gustavo Campero with the Los Angeles Angels at 164, Matt Shaw of the Cubs at 148, Ernesto Martinez Jr. with Milwaukee at 146, Carson Taylor with the White Sox at 145, Kyle Teal, who is just in the massive Garrett Crochet trade, at 145, and Roman Anthony at 143. So, Michael, go ahead and take it away if you want to talk about Kyle Teal and Roman Anthony a little bit.
Yeah, this is really my dream list, and I will say it is still a little weird. I actually did a double take earlier, seeing, you know, Chicago White Sox written next to Kyle Teal's name. Not that I'm upset at all about the trade, and that's another conversation for another day. But I'll start with Roman Anthony. And I mean, what can you not say about Roman Anthony? I mean, he's got the whole package. The hit tool is plus plus, in my opinion. It's just a really smooth bat path. It's just really sound mechanics. He understands the strike zone very, very well, which I think is what really got him on a lot of people's radars to begin with. You know, he can hit for power. He can take the ball the other way. He's not selling out for anything. You know, he'll hit his homers when he gets the right pitches, but you know, he's just as comfortable kind of taking, you know, slapping a ball the other way or finding a gap. Defensively, good routes. Not the strongest arm in minor league baseball by any means, but accurate, you know, gets the ball where it needs to go. So this guy is probably going to be in contention for an opening day roster spot, unless the Red Sox make some more moves and maybe get some additional outfielders, because obviously they lost Tyler O'Neill, so they're going to have to replace that power somewhere. But even still, he should be in the running for an opening day spot, could potentially be crack the opening day lineup depending on how the spring goes. And this is a guy that, you know, I don't think anyone at this point, I don't think anyone in Red Sox Nation doesn't know who he is and isn't just so excited for him to finally get up to the big club and showcase what he can do. And I am at the top of that list because he really looks like just a special, special talent. And then real quick, I won't go into too much depth on Kyle Teal, but because, you know, he's not a Red Sox anymore. So, you know, who cares? No, I'm kidding. But another guy that, you know, this, he was obviously the highlight of the Crochet package. And, you know, same thing goes offensively, you know, really good mechanics, a little bit of an open stance, you know, drives that back hip really well, hits for a ton of power. Excuse me for my computer going off. And, you know, the one thing that I do worry about with him is the defensive side of things. He does have a tendency. It's actually sort of a strange defensive profile because he has these stretches where you watch him play behind the plate and he's framing it well, he's blocking, you know, doing everything that you want out of a catcher and doing it very effectively. And then he goes through these stretches where that sort of disappears. So it's not that the talent or the tool isn't there. It's just the consistency of it. And it will be interesting to see how that plays out, because obviously there are some other great catchers in that White Sox system. So, and Teal does have the ability to play elsewhere in, you know, besides catcher. So it will be interesting to see if he does stick there, but nonetheless, the offensive profile alone, he should be up sooner rather than later in Chicago, and does project to be, you know, a middle of the order bat. So sad to see him go. Sad to see him go. Obviously, you know, it needed to be done because we needed a starter, but again, that's another conversation. So White Sox fans should be really excited about Teal, and Red Sox fans should be over the moon about Roman Anthony, and I know I certainly am. So
yeah, you know, he needed an outfielder. You could have just signed one. So,
too soon, man. Too soon.
No, it's all right. I understand. You can make the jokes. I put myself in a position to get hurt with the Juan Soto thing, and you know, it stung a little bit, but you know, I said to myself that $700 million was going to be their kind of no-go point. You know, they weren't going to go past that figure. And once it got up to $740, $750, I figured they were out. So they didn't get him. They made a move for a pitcher, and I don't think they're done yet. So
may I interest you in a Nolan Arenado?
Yeah, Arenado's is out there. Obviously, the news today is, as we're recording this, is that he exercised his no trade clause, did not want to go to Houston, which was interesting to say the least, because it looks like he's going to be in need of a third baseman, because it doesn't seem like Alex Bregman's coming back. But the Red Sox were on his list of teams that he would want to be traded to. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. You know, I don't know if the Red Sox are necessarily ready to kind of move Devers into like a DH role. Because obviously he pales in comparison to Arenado defensively, but he has gotten better, I will say, in, you know, baby steps. So yeah, there's a lot of ways the Red Sox could go the rest of this offseason. You know, Arenado's a name. I know Teoscar Hernandez is still out there. And then obviously with the pitching, you still have Corbin Burnes that hasn't been signed. A lot of talk around the Mariners pitchers, but I'll save that for my for another podcast, for because we're talking about prospects here.
For opening day 2025. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, I would just love, you know, a little Nolan Arenado with some money eaten up for some Richard Fitz. That'd be great.
Hey, you say his name right.
I'm not going to be the one to say it. I'm going to keep this PG.
Anyway, just to finish out here with stat of the day, other names outside of the top five for AA are Heyu Lee of the Detroit Tigers at 141, Gage Workman, who was with the Tigers but was taken by the Cubs in the Rule 5 draft at 140, Dominic Keegan with Tampa Bay at 138, Ben Cowles with the Cubs at 138, Samuel Basayo with Baltimore at 134, Ryan Clifford with the Mets at 133, and James Trantos at 130. Either of you can go. I don't really care. Just go.
Well, first of all, I'm pretty sure it's pronounced How You Lee, not Hey You Lee. Yeah, so How You Lee is a guy who I saw a bit of this season in AA, and I'm kind of shocked to see him up here because I don't really like the power projection. The offensive profile, I think, is good. I think he's got a 55 hit tool with a plus approach at the plate. He's pretty selective, and he can lay off. He doesn't chase a ton. He will fish for some breaking balls below the zone, but, you know, overall he's pretty disciplined. But he really lacks power, in my opinion. Like, right now, I think that he will develop 45 power. I would have him at 30 present power, 45 future. I just don't think that there's much pop in the bat. He's more of a line drive gap hitter, so I am kind of shocked to see him up on this list. But the only other guy that I will go ahead and talk about will be Samuel Basayo. I have seen a bit of him as well. I will say that I just did a scouting report on him, as a matter of fact. You can go check that out on our website, prospectsworldwide.com. And his profile is pretty similar to Carlos Santana, which is who I comped him to, thanks to the help of Drake. But yeah, he's a guy that, you know, a lot of people are high on Basayo. They think they really like the hit tool. However, I don't necessarily like the hit tool. I think he's, in my opinion, very much a power over hit profile. That being said, the power is really good. I think he's got 35 plus home run potential. He can hit the ball up the middle the other way, over the fence, and there's a lot of promise. You know, he's only 19, reached AA. So I do think that he has a good ceiling, but he does chase a bit. He will fish quite a bit for breaking balls below the zone. He doesn't have the best bat path or approach. I think he's built more on hunting fastballs. So I do, you know, I'm not shocked that he's on this list, but I think long-term projection, I think that he is a power over hit guy with, you know, his defense behind the plate is decent, but with, you know, people are hounding Adley right now, but Adley is long-term catcher. And I think that to save his bat, he is going to shift over to first base and or possibly DH, which is what he did the majority of the season this year. So he pretty much will be a power only profile, in my opinion, because his defense at first is not good. So those are my two prospect takes from that list.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And Austin, you failed to mention, though, we have a new formatting for our scouting reports. Go check them out. I think that they're a lot, like, better to read now. There's not as clumped together. And pitchers, I have a pitcher scouting report coming out. We are dropping more, like, analytical data that we can find on a player or on a, you know, a prospect. And so I just wanted to mention that. And for once, thank you for pointing out that I come up with your comps for players. I really appreciate that.
Hey, I've never not given you credit, okay? So don't start with me on this.
Yeah, I know. But there's also people that take our footage and don't credit us. But that is...
That's another story for another day.
I was going to make that connection, but that's too messed up. But anyway, Michael, anybody here you want to talk about, or you just want to move on?
I talked at length already about Anthony and Teal, so we can move right along.
Okay. Basically, just for me, I really have not seen anyone here besides Ben Cowles and James Triantos. And even then, I really saw James Triantos, I think, maybe once, and it was because of Caden Schmidt's footage. Shout out to Caden Schmidt. Your name is not Caden Smith. That is my bad. But Cowles looked like a contact first guy. He looked pretty decent out here at AFL, and James Triantos is obviously James Triantos. It's a guy that I don't think the Cubs really want to part with, but to get something good, I think that they will end up parting ways with him because it seems like they're going for it with the Kyle Tucker trade and a bunch of other stuff. The Cody Bellinger shipping him away, they're just freeing up money and they're freeing up spots to add more impact players. But anyway, that was stat of the day. That was our longest stat of the day we've ever had. That took up, you know, two parts of the episode so far, but anyway, we're going to move on to start bench cuts. And anyway, this is the part where Austin and Michael both hate my guts because I really make really hard ones. Today's start bench cut will be Travis Bazzana, Christian Campbell, and JJ Weatherholt. Austin, I'll let you take over because you told me that this was easy.
Yeah, so for me, this was easy. I'll be honest, I haven't seen any of Christian Campbell. I've only heard word of mouth, so he's going to be my cut. Now, the kind of difficult part is choosing between Bazzana and Weatherholt. I did see Weatherholt when he came to TCU. Unfortunately, that game, all he did was strike out, foul out, and ground out. So he did literally nothing. The one time I got to see him, I did think that he looked good at short. I think that he can stick there. I'm not sure if he will, but I think he does have the capability to stick there. However, Bazzana is a guy who I've seen since his sophomore season last year. And I still think that Oregon State probably would have knocked Sam Houston out anyway. But he's a guy I felt was the single-handed reason why they knocked Sam Houston out in the NCAA regionals. He made some game-saving plays. You know, his defense looked really good. His bat profile is excellent. I think there's a lot of projection there. I do think that he has a very good ceiling and somewhat of a good floor. So he is going to be the guy that I start. I think he can provide some pop. I think he's got a good hit tool. And Weatherholt, I think, you know, like I said, I didn't really see him do anything, but I know that the profile is more of a contact over power profile. So I do think Weatherholt's going to be a good player and, you know, he should be good with the Cardinals, but I think that overall the profile from Bazzana is much better along with, you know, I like Bazzana's defense just because I've seen him more, but so I'm going to go start Bazzana, bench Weatherholt and cut Campbell. And I do really like Bazzana because he's an Aussie and, you know, those people are great. I spent the summer of 2016 over there. And my introduction to the country was a grandpa cussing out his granddaughter. So that was great.
Okay, that is a fun fact there. But Michael, go ahead and take over here. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, for sure. This was definitely one I had to think, you know, long and hard about. I think the obvious pick is Bazzana, and that's who I would start as well. I think there's of these three guys, he has the most complete profile, if you would. Austin already touched on his defense, and I really like the mechanics offensively, and I think there's a good mix of, you know, power and just kind of get gap to gap approach as well. So I'm definitely going to start Bazzana and Christian Campbell. And Austin, it makes sense that you really don't know much about Christian Campbell because nobody really knew much about Christian Campbell before this year. And he really, really just burst onto the scene and now has, in essence, really taken over Kyle Teal's spot after the Crochet trade in sort of this big three of the Red Sox top prospects, you know, with Marcelo Mayer and Roman Anthony. And just, you know, that's how good he was this past year. And it's an interesting profile because when you look offensively, the swing mechanics are a little choppy, in my opinion, but he still manages to hit for decent power, and he's, you know, and especially to the opposite field, which is what really impresses me. And he's the kind of guy where all the tools are there and the ceiling is incredibly high. And I'm really excited to kind of see how he continues to progress. He's defensively, he's smooth, quick hands. He runs average, I would say. But yeah, the offensive profile is definitely interesting because you watch his swing and it really almost looks like it has that, you know, that really old school kind of A to B approach to the baseball, which of course is, you know, as I said, it's old school. It's out. It's not really the way anymore, but he makes it work. And, you know, he drives the ball to all fields and he's got a ton of bat speed, which I think is his biggest plus. So a guy that I'm very high on, and I'm going to bench him over Weatherholt. And I mean, that's probably a scorching hot take, but when I look at Weatherholt and compare him to Campbell, you know, when we talk about ceilings, I think Weatherholt is closer to his ceiling than Campbell is. I think there's so much more that Campbell could become. And when you look at Weatherholt, it's a glove over hit guy. And there's not a lot of power in the bat, in my opinion. So I just like the profile more for Campbell. And again, this has nothing to do with the fact that he's on the Red Sox, and I will swear to that on everything that I hold sacred. But really, I think it's just when you look at these two side by side, I think Weatherholt is closer to kind of what his ceiling is going to be, whereas Campbell, there's just so much more that he could become as a player. To really sort of round out his profile. So I'm going to start Bizzana. I'm going to sit Campbell, and I'm going to cut JJ Weatherholt.
That's interesting. But I wanted to say something here. Where do you think Christian Campbell sticks long-term defensively?
That's a great question. And I would put him as a second baseman. And I think that fits both his athleticism the best. I think his footwork needs a little bit more work, so I'm not sure about shortstop. And also, too, if you just look at the bigger picture of the Red Sox going forward, obviously we still, of course, have Trevor Story manning the shortstop position and just kind of crossing your fingers and praying to God that this year we can actually get a full season out of him. But after that, of course, you know, it really is looking like Marcelo Mayer is going to be the guy to step into that role. So I think second base is his landing spot. I think he could play shortstop. I think he does have shortstop in him, but I think second base is the best fit.
See, that's interesting because if you guys couldn't tell, Travis Bizzana is a second baseman. And when I researched Christian Campbell, I think MLB said like shortstop, outfield, second base. I was like, okay. And then JJ Weatherholt, they labeled him as shortstop, second base. But Austin, what you said with JJ Weatherholt of him sticking at short, he's not going anywhere at short for the Cardinals because Mason Wynn's already there. So at most, he'll be second base. And then you have a Wynn and JJ Weatherholt up the middle combo. And that kind of factored into my decision there. Like, because with me, a lot of the time, like Travis Bizzana with the Guardians should absolutely shine. They have started to really revamp their prospect development, their player development. And like, not only do they take really solid pitchers, but they have position players that, you know, are going to reach their ceiling. And Bizzana, arguably, you got to start him. With Christian Campbell and JJ Weatherholt, that's just so close. It's not even funny, but at the end of the day, like JJ Weatherholt is probably maybe a year behind Christian Campbell, just because, just in my opinion, Christian Campbell may have the safer overall tools compared to JJ Weatherholt. So with that, as much as I'm dreading doing this because I'm a Cardinals fan, Weatherholt would have to be cut in this situation. Anyway, that was a very interesting start bench cut with the three guys that have probably going to torch the Miners as they keep going forward. But now we're going to talk about the opposite end of the scale. We've talked about guys before. This topic's called busted prospects, or maybe the coal that you get in your stocking type of stuff, because of where they're at now in their development and how much of the hype has died down. And this time, last time, I think, Austin, we talked about Miguel Amaya, I believe. Now we're talking about Oscar Colas. And I know that I remember when he was going to be signed, how much hype was around him. They said like 30 home run bat, plays the outfield. He was in Japan. I remember there were so many like teams that wanted Oscar Colas, and now he's 26. I think he's injury prone. And I love to hear your guys' thoughts on how worried White Sox fans should be with Oscar Colas.
You know, it is an interesting question. And, you know, especially for a team like the White Sox, because when you look at where they're at right now, they need all the prospect help that they could possibly get. And yeah, Colas has been, you know, a guy with obviously a ton of hype coming in, and you really haven't seen it. And the numbers back it up. I mean, you know, we played in what? I'm looking at it right now. I mean, 13 games in pro ball this year. So, you know, a limited window, but, you know, striking out at a 26% clip, striking out at a 23% clip in, you know, 109 games in AAA. So, yeah, if I'm a White Sox fan, I mean, this is a guy that they not necessarily staked their wagon to as an organization, but a guy that was definitely seen as somebody that could, you know, make an impact, you know, this year, next year, and for the years to come. So I would definitely be nervous. I mean, just looking at these numbers, you know, a lot of time, you know, especially looking at K rates and walk rates and stuff as guys come through the minors, it's no surprise to see those numbers be very high early on in the process. But with the good prospects and the ones that pan out, you usually see those numbers trickle down as time goes on. That has not been the case with Colas whatsoever. And toss in the fact that he's 25 years old already, I mean, that it sounds crazy, but, you know, you're already on the wrong side of 25 and you really haven't made the impact yet. So, yes, I would definitely be hitting the panic button if I'm a fan of the White Sox. Because they can't afford to miss right now. They really can't, because it's, you know, this is going to be a long rebuilding process, and having guys like him, you know, come up and just not perform is only going to elongate that timeline.
See, what's interesting is he has already debuted. Like, he debuted last year, really had a bad year. And I know he's not a prospect anymore, but I wanted to put him because of just how much hype he had. Because I remember when it was going through the system, it was just wait for Colas and Robert. Colas and Robert. Colas and Robert. Mm-hmm. Robert, injury Robert. Prone. Colas, injury prone. And don't get me wrong, I love Robert. Robert's an...
Robert.
Okay, he specified there was Robert. So I don't know what to tell you. But Oscar Colas, he's a definitely an interesting guy to watch in 2025. As Michael, he's actually 26 now. So he is it'll be a really interesting thing for him, for the White Sox in 2025, because if he has a pretty good 2025, trade him at the deadline. Go get prospects for him. He'll probably get a nice haul of prospects if he can turn around his career. That was a pretty fun discussion on Oscar Colas. But anyway, now we move on to our gift giving for any fan of baseball, especially for the Cardinals, the Rangers, and the Red Sox, or any fantasy people, which we know that some of y'all listen to us. But 2025 breakout prospect, who is your call for the Rangers, Austin? Go ahead and speak your mind.
Yeah, so my breakout prospect for the Rangers will be a guy that they picked out of the University of Tennessee, and that's going to be outfielder Dylan Drayling. I did see Drayling on MLB TV some, and I really like the hit tool. I think there's some pop in his bat. I do think that right now it's more of a line drive rather than over the fence power, but I do think that as he develops and gets stronger, I do think there's room for a bit more strength. I don't know how tapped he's into his frame, but I do think that he can gain maybe like 10 more pounds of muscle. And he's just a guy, I really first saw him in the NCAA playoffs, and he really stood out. And I think that his performance in the College World Series really helped him get picked higher than expected. I believe he was the second round pick behind Malcolm Moore. And yeah, I just really liked what I saw during the Hickory streams. He didn't get sent to high A, and I think he is a corner outfielder, but I can see him under a full season of pro development. I think that right now he's definitely, like, he's ranked within the system fairly decently, but he's not on anyone's top 100 lists, and I'm not sure if we would have him on ours if we get around to doing one. But I think that with a strong season, let's say he starts 2025 off in high A, and then he climbs his way to double A, and he performs there, the power looks good, and the hit continues to develop, I could see him not only cracking top 100, I could see him being close to the 50 range. I would say potentially like anywhere from in the 60s realistically, but I think that if he really crushes double A, if he ends up making it there, I think that would really help boost his rank across all of minor league baseball. I think that he's pretty exciting from what I've seen. I don't know if he has all-star caliber potential yet, but I think that he minimally is a regular who will provide some quality at bats and some good seasons. So I think that right now he's my breakout prospect for 2025.
Very, very interesting. And you have talked about him before. I just forgot about him, to be honest. But anyway, Michael, I saw that you put a guy that I can't even pronounce his first name. So go ahead and take over for me.
You are not alone. I actually, out of respect to the player, I actually Googled a phonetic pronunciation of his first name. And it also, in looking through the Red Sox prospect list again and going back through everything, I really realized that there's a lot of long and confusing names in the Red Sox system. So best of luck to Dave O'Brien or whoever's in the booth for the next 6 or 7 years. But anyway, let's get back to the breakout guy. So my breakout prospect for the Boston Red Sox is a guy by the name of Yostinson Garcia. Yes, it's spelled with a J, and it's very confusing, but it is Yostinson Garcia. He's an outfielder, and this guy above, I got the chance to see some of his at-bats over the summer when I was up in Portland, and this guy is all about power. He is a power guy. He is always going to be a power over hit guy, but I really liked the mechanics that I saw. And, you know, it's a big uppercut swing, but he controls the bat really well. I think there's a good amount of bat speed there presently, and I think there's room for more. He's a big frame in the box, and he just has this commanding, you know, presence about him and just has a lot of confidence when he's up there, which I think is, you know, something you want to see, especially in a young hitter. And looking at the numbers as well, you know, this is a guy, he played across three levels in 2024. So he started in A ball, went up to high A, and finished the year in Portland. In 53 games in high A, he hit 16 home runs, had a slugging percentage of .627 and a WRC plus of 176. So the pop is there and then some. You know, he's not going to be a singles hitter. You know, there are some high K rates, but the walk rates have gone down, or actually, I just contradicted myself. Yes, he's not a hit tool guy. The walk rates have gone down. The strikeout rates are high. But still, I think the mechanics are there. And, you know, defensively, he doesn't run very well. So he's either going to be a corner outfield slot guy or, you know, potentially a future designated hitter. But I really think, especially coming up, you know, in the Red Sox system and, you know, hopefully getting the chance to play one day at Fenway Park, he's a right-handed hitter. With that big swing, I think he could do a lot of damage and just play pepper with that green monster. So Yostinson Garcia, my breakout prospect for the Boston Red Sox this year.
Man, I would not have gotten that in a million years. I would have said something like Yostinson or something. I would not have said yo.
I would not have either. I had to Google it. I Googled how to pronounce his name. And apparently it is like a thing amongst, you know, all the a lot of the people who tweet and write about Red Sox prospects. They all struggle with it. But luckily Google was able to give me the literal phonetic pronunciation of the name. So there you go. Yostinson.
That's very interesting. And he used Google. Google is one of our friends. Google, you should sponsor us. We're never getting that call. But anyway, you guys both went with outfielders, which is really interesting. I am not. I'm going with a right-handed pitcher who kind of already broke out, but no one is talking about him. Now, to start this off, I want to say he has one of the weirdest leg kicks I've ever seen. He kind of does a thing where his front leg goes back first, and then he goes and does his normal leg kick. It's very reminiscent to like a John Gant, if you guys remember him. But this guy was a 2-year DSL guy, spent all last year at Complex League. And then he kind of broke out this year in low A. His name is Juan Salas. He's a right-handed pitcher, 21 years old, signed out of Mexico. A little bit about his profile. This year, he had a 2.62 ERA, a 3.31 FIP, 113 in his pitch, 26% K rate with a 5.5 walk rate. And that was his only good season to date, which kind of is scary because, you know, breakout seasons happen and then they go back to their norm. But anyway, his fastball touches like 94-ish with a 2300 to 2500 RPM, but he's normally around 89, 93. He has a curveball, changeup, slider, and apparently he has a cutter and a sinker. But the cutter and sinker are used sparingly. But curveballs mid to high 70s at 2100 to 2300 RPMs. Changeup 81 to 85, 80, touching 86 with 1900 to 2300. And then slider 80 to 83, touching 84 at 2300 to 2600. And he is a starter profile. His, like I said, funky leg kick, very deceptive, but it's a low effort delivery. It's kind of like something he's done ever since he was like a kid, probably. But he is a little undersized, but he's fastball heavy. Changeup is his best secondary and definitely someone to watch with the Cardinals track record. And what I meant by that was the Cardinals have a track record of taking really funky delivery guys or some guys that are like more deceptive than power. So like Cooper Jerpy, Andre Pallante, Quinn Matthews, and Zach Showalter are all guys that are in the Cardinals system right now that have some type of weird delivery or some type of hitch or something, or like an awkwardness to them, and then they start to thrive. And for me, that's just one guy. Like, this guy is probably going to start in high A, and you should start to see him pop up on top prospect lists and just starting to get to know Juan Salas as a right-handed pitching prospect. But that's just from my initial research, and I might even just do a small scouting report of him for Prospects Worldwide eventually. But that is my own personal breakout prospect from the St. Louis Cardinals. Now we go to overall. So any team is on the table here. Either one of you can go. I don't really care, but just speak.
All right. So shifting to, as Drake said, the overall league as a whole. My breakout pick, it's a little bit off the beaten path, if I will say, but it's a guy by the name of Braxton Ashcraft. He is a right-handed pitcher in the Pirates system, and the type of guy who I just, you know, seen a lot of clips of him, seen a lot of film on him, and I really like the mechanics, very smooth on the mound. You know, it's a very simple delivery. Almost reminds me a little bit of like of a Zach Gallen in a way with the mechanics. He's a very tall guy. He's 6'5". So a very, you know, imposing frame on the mound. The fastball can get up, you know, 96, 97. You know, it sits in the 94, 95 range. It's flat, but it plays well up in the zone. He sells the changeup really well, and he also his third pitch, or his out pitch, if you would, is his slider. And the slider's a little interesting. It's not a big sweeping slider that I think is becoming more customary in the game today. It's the break is a lot tighter. It has a little bit more, you know, vertical drop to it, but it's a very effective pitch. It generates a lot of chases, you know, low in the zone. So a good out pitch there. So I really like the pitch mix. I really like the mechanics. It's a very repeatable delivery. My only knock on a guy like Ashcraft is he's a little older. You know, he's 20. He's gonna be 25 going into this year. I think he's had the been bit by the injury bug throughout his time in the minors. But from what I've seen on the clips, and you know, the numbers back it up a little bit as well. You know, I could see him being a guy that kind of sneaks his way into that back of the Pirates rotation. Of course, you know, everybody knows the Pirates rotation, assuming they hold on to everybody, is, you know, loaded with Skeens and Keller and Jared Jones. But I think he could be a nice complement, you know, in one of in the 4 or 5 spot in the back of that rotation to complement those three. So, you know, good, like I said, good mechanics, smooth delivery, good arsenal. So I really like what I see from this guy, Braxton Ashcraft, and definitely a name to keep your eye on.
So I actually love your pick of Ashcraft because during the football season, I actually helped the local paper with, you know, box scores and updating stats and everything. And one of the sports writers slash editors at this newspaper actually played high school ball with Ashcraft.
There you go. Love
Yeah,
it.
so
And
we were actually just talking about him the other week, ironically enough.
I love that you mentioned Braxton Ashcraft, because one of my underrated is going to be a Pirates starting pitcher. So there's some foreshadowing for all of our listeners. But right now, we'll let Austin take over. Austin, go ahead and talk about your pick.
Yeah, so my pick is going to be Colt Emerson of the Seattle Mariners. So I remember first seeing Emerson on MILB TV streams when he was with Modesto in 2023, I believe that was last season. And, you know, he's a really exciting bat. I really didn't get a feel for his power, but I think that since then it has developed pretty nicely. I know that Drake, you saw him for a little bit at the AFL, and through the video that I saw through you, I think that it's a pretty good approach, pretty solid approach overall. I think that he's a guy who should develop into a plus hit tool. I think he's a pretty safe prospect overall. I know that he has been hurt a little bit, but I think the profile is very safe. I think that right now I think he's fairly rated right now. But I think that with a full healthy season, I think he's a guy that could potentially skyrocket up everyone's list. Like he could end up being, you know, a top three Mariners prospect and end up being like a top 50 overall. I think that he's probably 2 years away from debuting. I would say is safe, maybe three. That is if he stays healthy the remainder of the rest of the way. But yeah, Emerson, I think, is a guy who's got good defense as well. But overall, I think he's got a very exciting ceiling with a good floor and a good defensive profile as well. So I do think that Emerson is due for a breakout 2025.
Yeah, that's very interesting, because I put in a tweet that I think that he's guaranteed like a 60 hit. Like, I can't predict the future, but I'm trying. But I think he's definitely a 60 hit. Shortstop, he looks really good, like really good. And I believe I put him in as the top three bat from Arizona Fall League, which I am working on. That is more foreshadowing for a future list that's supposed to be dropped on prospectsworldwide.com. I'm trying to get it done by the end of the year, but we will see what happens with Christmas and the new year. But
Oh, one
Austin,
more
I'm
thing
gonna
about
say,
Emerson that I forgot to mention. is something that also adds to his ceiling is he's only 19 years old and he already reached high A, and that is with missing some time. So he debuted at 17 last year, was 18 this season, and turned 19 in July. So he'll be only 19 years old, potentially reaching double A. So that's really promising right there.
Austin, I'm going to go ahead and stay in Washington and stay in Seattle, because my prospect is a guy that, you know, I'm high on. We watched him out here at Arizona Complex League. You are familiar with him because you love his brother more than anybody. And his brother has a similar profile to him. But I'm going to go with Kelvin Alcantara from the Seattle Mariners. And this last year at Rookie Ball, he hit 287, 381, 433 with an 814 OPS, a 110 weighted runs created plus, 23% K rate, and a 12% walk rate. And currently my grades, they don't sound too promising, but when you factor in that this basically would make him a 20 home run bat, it would be probably, my grades are 40 hit, 50 power, 45 field, 55 arm, 45 speed with a roll 4. And to me, he's such a similar profile to his brother Kevin, who's with the Cubs, who was in a trade with Anthony Rizzo going to the Yankees. His brother probably does have a better hit tool than him, but there's massive power potential in his bat. Very lofty swing, but he does barrel a ball quite well. He kind of ended ACL, or he ended his year staying in Complex League, which was a little weird to me because he had a really good year. But I do think that next year, if he is out here at Complex League again, he'll be here for maybe a week or two, and then he'll be up at low A at some point. He'll be up at Modesto. But that is my pick for the overall breakout prospect, the Seattle Mariners, Kelvin Alcantara. Anyway, now let's get to the part of the show that gets us in trouble more than anything. We have had some very questionable takes here with we've had a Jason Dominguez overrated. We've had an Anthony Volpe overrated. Michael has another Yankees prospect is overrated. Yankee fans, we don't hate you. We hate your prospects. But anyway, we'll start off with our overrated section. And I actually want to go first because mine is probably the highest, the amount of shock that might go into somebody after hearing this. But I got to go with Jack Coglione. I saw him at Arizona Fall League this year, and he was an underwhelming defender. No real play discipline, questionable swing decisions. The power's there. He has loads, absolute loads of power. Like, he hits the absolute crap out of the ball. But in my opinion, every other tool is questionable. I don't think he'll hit for more than like a 45 hitter. I just don't see him really profiling anywhere else other than first, which, yes, the power is there, but the defense is kind of questionable. There's a reason to be hype, but we just need to slow down with him being like a top 20 prospect in baseball. Because power-only guys bust so much more often than guys that have, like, you know, a better hit tool and have, you know, a little bit more power, a little less power to their game. But I will let one of you guys go ahead and take the floor, because the shock has probably ended with whoever is listening. So go ahead and one of you two.
Drake is probably getting angry DMs as we're speaking. But Michael, if you want to go first.
Sure. And real quick, just to touch on Caglione, because I don't necessarily disagree with Drake's take, but I don't necessarily agree with it either. And the reason I say that is just, you know, you're not wrong whatsoever. I don't think about guys, you know, with that are power over hit, but to me, and just being, you know, watching Caglione last year, like, I think a guy that has the power that he does, I mean, I think it's very rare to see somebody so young just have so much of a pure power tool that, you know, the rest can be developed a little bit. And even if he turns into a guy like you said with 45 hit but plus power, I mean, that in today's game especially, like, that's going to play, and that's going to play pretty well. But again, I'm not disagreeing whatsoever about the defensive side of things. And, you know, the fact that right now there is a lot to be desired, especially in the decision making and whatnot at the plate. And, you know, in terms of just a lot of people kind of jumping the gun on him. But I still think there's a light there at the end of the tunnel for Caglione. But anyway, getting into my overrated guy, and I kind of forgot that that Volpe and Jason Dominguez had been discussed. But I swear to God that I did not choose this player strictly because he's on the Yankees. If you had showed me this player and not told me who he was, I would have come to the same conclusions. So enough dilly-dallying. My overrated prospect is Spencer Jones. And I just don't see it. And I had the chance again, you know, when I was in Portland back in August to watch him play, because they were playing the Somerset Patriots, I believe, is the Yankees double-A team. And, you know, obviously Spencer Jones is a big frame. There's a lot of just pure athleticism there. I think he can serve well to put on a little more weight and get a little stronger, but the athleticism is there. You know, the defensive routes in the outfield are certainly there, but the offensive profile to me, it leaves a lot to be desired. I think there's a lot of choppy mechanics. He has a very straight front leg, and it's not really a leg kick. It's more like a leg hover almost. I'm trying to think of someone to compare it to. But I'm drawing a blank off the top of my head, and just the bat path and everything in that realm, it just doesn't do it for me. I just don't see it. And you know, when he connects, you know, the ball obviously goes a long way. There's definitely some power there, and he's able to drive the ball on certain occasions. But I think overall, I think the mechanics, as he continues to go up in levels in AAA, and eventually he'll make his way to the majors, I would assume one day, I think they're going to come back to bite him. And I think that real rigid stance and that rigid front leg that he uses, it's going to be tough to make adjustments to secondary pitches and stuff. So I could be very wrong, and you know, I hope I am wrong for Spencer Jones's sake. But right now, the way I just don't see it with Jones. And if Yankee fans want to have a discussion with me, you know where to find me.
That's very interesting. And I do want to touch on what you said about Jock before we go to Austin. But yes, I project him as like a 45, but the way that he was swinging the bat at AFL, just from the times that I saw him, to me, his hit tool is even more of a question mark than 45. I was being like kind of generous because he hits the shit out of the ball. Excuse my language. But he, like, there was just, it'd be slider, 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 whiff, whiff, whiff. Just, it just didn't seem like he had any type of like structure or plan. He just basically, he gets a fastball, gone. But if he gets anything else, it's probably going to be a swing and miss or a whiff. So that's just what I saw from AFL. And like, just like you said with Spencer Jones, I could be completely wrong, and he could shut me up and hit, like, I don't know, 340 and have, like, 25 bombs or whatever. But that's just what I saw from Caglione, which is kind of a hot take on its own. But anyway, Austin, go ahead with yours.
Yeah, so my guy is going to be another guy who's more of a power over hit profile, and that's going to be Brady House. I know that overall, he has lost some prospect hype. There's not really as many people talking about him, but I do think that he still is overrated overall. I get he's 21 and he, you know, he played a full season in AA. And I do think that if everything goes right, he could develop into a 30 home run bat. I think he does have plus power potential. I will say that he finally shifted over to third. I did not like him at shortstop. I just thought his defense was bad at short. I thought it was 40 even. He just didn't have much range, I think, and the glove work really needed improvement. But since shifting over to third, I do think that his defense has really improved, and I could see him developing into an above average third baseman. But again, it's just like we've been talking about a lot this episode. He's a power over hit profile, and there's just so much risk with those guys. I think he's going to chase too much. I do think that with experience, he could develop into a 50 hit. I think 50 hit is a ceiling. But I really have a lot of question marks with Brady House. I honestly think there's a good chance that he busts, and he might have like maybe one season, one or two good seasons, and then he just kind of falls off the face of this earth. I honestly don't see a lot of long-term projection, I would say. And yeah, just, you know, there's so many power over hit guys are a dime a dozen anymore these days, and he's just another one where, even though he does have good defense at third and a strong arm, obviously everyone knows about the arm strength, but he's just a guy that I could see really, really struggling as he gets called up to the bigs. And like I said, if he has one or two good seasons, you know, that's fine. But I just think there's so much risk. I think that he's got a good ceiling, but he's kind of got a bad floor, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's very interesting. All of three of our DMs are currently getting hate mail. But anyway, now we go to the more pleasant part, and that is the underrated section. And I've never heard of Michael's guy, so I'll let him go first. So go ahead and talk about another crazy name. I don't know where you're coming with these crazy names, but I'd love to hear yours.
Absolutely. So my underrated guy is a guy by the name of Eliazar Dishme. I hope I'm saying that right. That one I didn't Google, but I hope I'm saying that right. So Dishme is a right-handed pitcher. He's in the Marlins system, and he's only, let me looking at his page here, he's only 20 years old, and last year was his first sort of full season in minor league ball. And he's the kind of guy, you know, we always talk about how you can't just look at the stats. And he is a guy that fits that description perfectly, because if you were to just look at his numbers, you would write him off in a second, because obviously a small sample size, but they haven't really been pretty. But when you watch this guy on the film when you watch him on the film, there's a lot of promise and a lot of potential that I see. He has a very almost want to use the word violent delivery. Medium leg kick, but he gets very, very whippy in his arm action, and really sort of lets his arms fly and, fires that thing in there. And his fastball's got some good run to it. It's in the 94 to 95 range now, but I think there's definitely a lot of room to go up from there, into the high 90s. And same with the curveball. It's another pitch that, you know, definitely with time and with, you know, just overall maturity of his body, is definitely going to find its way. So I think this is a guy that, you know, it's obviously still in the heavy question mark phase, but from a mechanic standpoint alone, I think there's a lot that he can build on off of last season and continue to kind of grow and kind of grow into his body a little bit more. But he definitely strikes me as a guy that can sit in the upper 90s with the fastball and feature an effective, you know, plus curveball or plus off-speed pitch as well. So Eliazar Dishme is going to be my underrated guy for the year. Miami Marlins right-handed pitcher.
That's very interesting. But I got to say one thing here. I love the Coach Kent Murphy reference right there. I don't know if you caught yourself in saying that, but you said, it was the fire that thing in there. That's like one of his signature phrases.
Now that you mention it.
I thought you did that intentionally, but I guess you didn't.
It's been a while since I've seen a Coach Murphy video.
Coach Kent Murphy, sponsor. No, I'm kidding. That would never happen. But anyway, Austin, go ahead with yours, and I completely agree with it. So I will let you have the floor. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my guy is going to be another Rangers prospect. Shocker. I know I have a bias, but my guy is going to be Alejandro Osuna. And Drake, I know you just said you agree with me, but yeah, Osuna is a guy that I first saw in Double A this season with Frisco, and he's a really, really interesting profile because offensively, I think he's got pop. I do like his approach. I think he's got plus discipline. I don't think he's going to chase a whole lot. I don't think he's going to fish a whole lot. I think he should draw a decent number of walks and get on base at a good clip. But yeah, the power isn't going to wow you or anything, but I do think he does show some pop. I think he's going to have good gap and potentially 25 home runs, probably a few times. I think realistically he'll be consistently around 20 to 24. But I do think the hit tool is good. I think, expect around 270. The thing that shocked me a lot this year at the AFL from what I saw, I know Drake that you saw more of his defense and can tell me more about it, but defensively, he did see time in center with Frisco, and I kind of saw him more as a corner outfielder. I didn't really care that much about his defense in center. I thought that it did lack a little bit of range, and the routes weren't bad, but Drake, you posted a couple of clips where he really made good defensive. The timing was great. He made over the fence grabs. And so now I do think that there still are question marks about his defense, but I think that he has shown enough that he can at least stick in center. But yeah, Osuna is definitely my guy. And I think that he is criminally underrated for as safe as a prospect as he is for the Rangers.
See, that's interesting that you said that about Alejandro Ozuna. And yeah, I was impressed with his defense, and I was a big fan of him offensively. But with me, it was the way he controls the strike zone. Like when they had the whole entire challenging strike calls, he got rung up on a pitch, and he immediately challenged it. And he was so confident that he got it right, he started taking all his stuff off, and then it ended up being a ball, and he was on first base. If he's doing that, then in that type of situation, he'll do that at the next level too. So he's going to do a lot of good. I completely agree with you on Alejandro Ozuna.
Yeah, and like I said, I do think he's going to draw a good number of walks. I didn't say control the zone, but like I said, he's not going to chase and he's not going to fish. But yeah, that just shows confidence and he knows what he's doing. And you got to have a confident hitter, and I think that just adds more to his projection.
Okay, so those two are really solid picks, and I foreshadowed about doing a Pirates pitcher, and Austin, I've talked about him before, and I really want to do a scouting report on him, which I'll probably end up doing, but I'm talking about Thomas Harrington, and nobody really talks about him. He has solid upside right-handed pitcher, and he is absolutely filthy. One of his, downsides is he loses velo as the game goes on, but he still manages a pretty solid whiff rate during the game. But like, in my opinion, his changeup is his best secondary. You'll hear that it's a low spin pitch, but gets insane depth on it, almost like a split change or a Vulcan change. But for me, he relies heavily on his sweeper. And he profiles a lot like Joe Musgrove, which if I'm a Pirates fan hearing that, I'm kind of happy because his fastball sits 91, 94, touching 95, with around 2,000 to 2,200 RPMs. His sweeper is 81, 83 with 2,400 to 2,600. Curveball is 77, 83 with 2,100 to 2,500. Now, Austin, listen, and Michael, listen to this one. Change up 81-85. His RPMs are 800 to 1,000. And his cutter is 86-88 with 2,000 to 2,300 RPMs. This is one guy that has risen really quickly. I think he made it all the way up to AAA. But Thomas Harrington is one guy that more people need to be talking about. And his stuff is absolutely disgusting. And I'm scared for when he debuts and makes the Cardinals look like little leaguers. But for my underrated, I think that's a pretty solid pick.
Yeah, you know, I remember you mentioning him throughout the season, and sounds like a pretty solid underrated pick. And yeah, you know, good luck, Cardinals fans.
Good luck any NL Central team. But anyway, let's move to something that we have done in the past, which is our year in review. And all three of us get pretty good looks during the year, whether it's video or live looks or from college, complex league, minor league baseball, whatever, high school, whatever it is. But basically, we did this last time, and Michael had a hilarious one about Bobby Dalbec getting a standing ovation at a AAA baseball game, which is hilarious to me. But anyway, Austin, I'm going to let you take over because I have this substantial list. Because, you know, when I'm out here, I'm at Complex League and Arizona Fall League. What were some of the top plays or players or whatever that you saw during the 2024 year?
Yeah, you know, so I was pretty much at a college game pretty much every week during the regular season, every other week. And then I was watching streams like no one's business. And I'm going to go with one that I saw live. I think this is going to be the only one for this segment because this segment could be like an hour alone if we know had our way with it. But I think the one that sticks out to me the most is I remember Ryan Johnson came in to Sam Houston. It was DBU versus Sam Houston, and Ryan Johnson, one of the most highly touted pitchers of the 2024 draft. You know, he ended up being a second round pick by the Angels, and the stuff played really, really well in college. And, you know, I knew it was going to be a challenging game for Sam Houston, and since that is a school that I went to, obviously I have a bias, you know, like you have a bias with GCU, but that's another story for another day. But, you know, from a scouting perspective, it was really, really interesting because Ryan Johnson was making decent Sam Houston hitters. Like, you know, they had guys like Malachi Lott, Jake Tatum, who's now at U University of Houston, you know, Jace Martinez, who is a promising freshman. And he made all these guys look like little leaguers. Like he was just throwing his devastating slider out of the zone. And, you know, I remember seeing Jake Tatum and he was just flailing at it. And Tatum is a better hitter than that. And, you know, so many guys were either hitting the ball into the dirt. And I think he struck out 15 batters that game. The game was going by so quickly. I think by the time it reached the ninth inning, I think the game had barely surpassed like 75 minutes. I think the final time was about like 90 to 100 minutes. Like it was that quick. It was almost like Greg Maddux. I obviously could be exaggerating, but I really remember it finishing under 2 hours, and it felt like a Greg Maddux college performance. Like Johnson had really good command of the zone. He controlled the zone. He just made everyone look silly. But then in the ninth inning, you know, Sam Houston still lost, obviously so, but it looked like it was going to be a, you know, 2 to 3 hit shutout, you know, easy cheesy lemon peasy. And then here comes Walker Yannick, who ended up being the Astros' first round pick. Still makes me kind of sad he didn't fall to the Rangers, but you know, he was their guy. He grew up an Astros fan, so I can't be too mad. But Yannick, you know, he was the one guy who put up good ABs throughout the game, and even then he still, I want to say he grounded out and, you know, hit a pop up. I don't remember exactly what he did, but I do remember in the ninth inning, he ended up breaking the shutout with a liner in the right center field gap, and he knocked in a run. And that to me showed that, you know, Yannick had question marks about his hit going into the season. People weren't sure if it would really play. Like it looked promising, but I think that solidified that, you know, he was already gaining a lot of hype as a first round pick, but I think that kind of solidified that he had first round potential. People were calling him a day one guy, you know, since his sophomore season. And I think to me at least that showed he's going to hit at the next level. So that's the play of the season that of the 2024 calendar year that I remember.
Yeah, that's very interesting. And folks, when we talk about we go out to games, like we do go out to games, and then there's times we don't even see anything. because nothing happens.
Yeah, so, because, you know, we're facing a bunch, or we're watching a bunch of scrubs face potential draft picks.
I mean that, but then you also have like complex league. Like, I think there was one time where the game was like 1-0, and the one was like a 23-24 year old guy that was like should be in double A at this point, but he was in complex league and he had a bomb or something. I forgot. But anyway, I have this list here of plays that I saw, like the top plays that I witnessed from the complex league and Arizona Fall League season. But Filippo Dettori and Braylon Morrell, Dettori of the Brewers, Braylon Morrell of the Rangers, both 3/4 of the way to the cycle, really upset me. I really thought that I was going to be able to see a cycle in person, and didn't happen. Shang-Yin Lin from the Reds had a multi-hit game. Both of them were base hits to left and center, and that also got some attention to our site. Chase DeLauder had a 400-foot bomb to dead center over at the Guardian side of the complex, which I know, Austin, you're not a huge DeLauder guy, but that was pretty like interesting to see because, you know, his swing is really awkward, but it works for him. I'm surprised you didn't mention this, but when you were out here, Wobin Francisca had a 4-hit night, and he's with the Guardians, and he turned into one of the best bats I saw out here. Obviously, I got to talk about Felton Celestin doubling off of Robbie Ray, which is former Cy Young, and it was like 96 on the black, and he hit it the other way. Josie Novas had a 106.4 exit velocity bomb that I saw in person. Lisbel Diaz of the Giants had a 3-hit game with a big-time home run. George Wolko had a like one of the first videos that we put up this year from Complex League, and that got 66,000 views, and that's still going up. I was falling in love with Asbel Gonzalez as a prospect. Kevin Alcantara had a bomb. Jacob Bresnahan had a 7K 18 whiff performance. One of the highlights of my 2024 was covering Arizona Fall League from Grand Canyon University, which is where I personally go to school, and that is why I am biased to them, Austin. I saw a Leodolis DeVries home run poolside, and it was absolutely, like, killed, massacred, because it was a no-doubt home run. Xavier Isaac had a hit an umpire with a 110-mile-an-hour single up the middle. And I also got a first pro bomb as well of Carlos Gutierrez. There are a few that, Austin, I want to get your guys' feedback on. But Ronnie Cabrera, Austin, this was probably the highlight of my Arizona Complex League. Do you want to tell the story, or do you want me to?
I'll kind of give my end of it. I remember we were sitting in behind home plate, and you had kind of been calling plays, you know, someone's going to hit a double, someone's going to hit a bomb. And I think you were like, what, 0 for 3 prior to Roni?
Yeah.
And then you were just like, all right, Roni's going to hit one deep. And literally like a second later, he just hit, I think it was to deep center, like over center field.
No, it was a hanging breaking ball, and it was high and far into left field. And it was one that he like bat flipped.
That's right. Like, I remember. I do remember the bat flip now, but I do remember like you were calling all throughout the game, and you were, you know, you were 0-for until that, and that one is what we remember now. So that was pretty great.
It was just so funny because I remember I said, "Hey, Ronnie's about to hit a bomb," and then hanging curveball, he hits a ball. I just remember your face was so funny. Your jaw was dropped. You're like, "What just happened?"
And the thing was. That was a loud home run. It wasn't just like, you know, he hit a hanging curveball like that. He crushed that pitch. Like, you know, any good hitter should hit a hanging breaking ball, but like Ronnie hit everything.
Every stitch of that ball. And it was just so funny. You could probably hear me kind of laughing in the background because of that happened. But anyway, and then I wanted to talk about a Sam Houston guy that I saw on rehab. Kyle Backus, he had a barehanded play for a pitcher, and it was kind of interesting because it was a ground ball to the first baseman. The first baseman threw a terrible like toss, and instead of the glove, he just says screw it, reaches out with his bare hand, catches the ball, and covers first. Really a really interesting play, and I know that any Sam Houston guy, you're kind of on them, and you kind of track their career. So that I don't know if you have actually seen Bacchus like in person or not.
Yeah, I saw him for that one game at the 2022 AFL. It was the first time I'd seen him in a while, and he was actually a non-drafted free agent signing out of Sam Houston. So to see his development reach, I believe he made it to Double A this season. He is a bit of an older prospect, but yeah, that's nice to see that he made one of your top plays.
Yeah, it was just really interesting, and of course I'd talk about Bellman. I mean, best prospect out there, but to end this, because we're finally going to be starting to end this podcast, it has been really fun. It's been a joy. And I just want to say from the bottom of my heart and the bottom of Austin's heart, I don't know if he even has a heart. He's probably soulless down there.
I don't have a heart.
Yeah, I could tell. But thank you, everyone, because I crunched the numbers a little bit. And this is without Austin's college videos, which probably put it a lot higher than even I have here. But just from ACL videos on all of our outlets, we had 1 million plus views. 842,000 views just from Twitter and X, just from ACL. Overall, from ACL and AFL, we had 964,000 views on Twitter and X. And we still also have not factored in Instagram and
YouTube shorts
as well, and YouTube in general, because we're still working on that. But thank you so much to everybody, like our readers, our listeners, a bunch of other stuff. Like, thank you, everyone, because that is really special, because now we know that we can hit a goal like that. Like, 964,000 views is crazy. Just for minor league baseball. That doesn't factor in any of your videos, Austin. Like, that's, if we add in your videos, it's probably 1.5 at least overall.
Yeah, you know, and thanks to all those views, like, I think prior to the year, we were right around, what, 3.5 thousand followers on X, somewhere around there. And now we're slowly but steadily approaching 5,000, which, considering we started in 2020 and we didn't really have all that much of a following, like we've come a long ways, and it is nice to see that we can reach those numbers, and hopefully someday we can be a larger account. That definitely is the goal, but in the meantime, like, we love putting in the work, and it's just been such a fun year. Like, I didn't get to go out to Frisco like I had hoped, but, you know, like Drake said, we're out there like every week. He definitely is out there at ACL like multiple times a week. I'm out at college baseball games at least once a week. I try to make multiple a week, and it's just so much fun for us. And, you know, there's nothing that we would change about it. And thank y'all for, you know, paying attention to our stuff.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's really, it makes us want to go out there more. And like, even though ACL this year, my God, so many terrible pitching, so much terrible pitching, just so much like being out there in 120 degree heat. Like, I do it because of you guys, for the people that listen, for the people that watch our videos, that read our stuff. But I also do it for me, because me and Austin both want to be scouts. That's like our end goal, or we want to be doing something in player development. So with you guys liking and retweeting, you guys are getting more eyes on our stuff. And that's what our end goal is with this site. Like, if we, speaking of that, we are still looking to hire people, which it is an unpaid, you know, gig, but you can get experience from us. We can help you guys out with anything for anybody that wants to get into the baseball industry. We do have people that have left prospects worldwide and gone to work for teams. So it does pay to, in the long term, to go ahead and go and be a part of a growing site that is incredible. But this is like my little outro here. Austin, do you have anything else to say on the topic, or anything, or the holiday, the New Year's, whatever you want to talk about?
No, not really. I will say, though, you know, This has been a very interesting year, and we very much are looking forward to the 2025 season. So if you're not yet following us on X, if you're not subscribed to our YouTube, if you're not following us on Instagram, be sure to look up all of our social media. You can just type in Prospects Worldwide and you'll find us there. We are hoping to bring y'all a lot more content, and we hope to get y'all more live ABs than ever before. You know, and another thing that can help is, you know, Drake and I have been reaching out to, you know, schools. We've been reaching out to like AFL, you know, we've been getting media passes. So even if we can't pay y'all, like the fact that you work for an organization, if you do want to do stuff for us, like you can say, you know, like, hey, you know, I'm a writer for this website. I'd like to get media credentials. Is there any way that I can do that? You know, it does help you get out to games. So even if you're not getting paid, getting some kind of media pass where you can actually go and see these guys is huge as far as like getting a feel for someone's game. So I definitely think that it's worth your time.
Yeah, that's very, very well said. And Michael unfortunately had a matter to leave. That's why I'm kind of just talking to Austin at this point. But it's also a thank you from him. Like he also has had stuff that has gotten pretty good views, and maybe when he goes out to games in 2025, we can give him access to our Twitter, and he can drop some good prospect content as well there. So we're really excited for 2025 and beyond for that matter, because with my mixture of Grand Canyon University, Arizona Complex League, Arizona Fall League, and potentially high school, if I can fit in a few, I can go see Hamilton, I can go see O'Connor and Mountain Ridge and a lot of other places in Arizona and get video of top guys out here. It may help us skyrocket with what Austin does with the draft and when he goes to Frisco, and even if he comes out here and helps me out with Complex League or Fall League, like whatever we all do, like we all do it just to bring good content for all of our fans. And that is, at the end of the day, that is what we want. And that is also, we also just want to get a job in baseball. And that's basically what the end goal is for us.
Yep. You just got to keep on grinding.
Yep. Just keep on swimming. Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. No, I'm kidding. But anyway, Austin, I think it's time to go ahead and end this podcast. I know Michael sends his regards. He says bye-bye. He says arrivederci or whatever the heck.
Arrivederci.
Jeez. Arrivederci. Or he says, hey, I'm stuff, walking. Right. You know, because he's from Boston. So anyway, this has been Prospects Overload. Thank you, everyone, for listening. My name, as always, is Drake Mann. You can follow me on Twitter at DrakeMann4. I got an Arizona Fall League list coming out hopefully by the end of the year, and multiple other scouting reports that I'm hoping to get done before school hits back in a couple weeks. So, yeah, this has been fun, Austin. It was a pleasure, as always, to have you on. And arrivederci, everybody. I can't speak Italian, but have a happy holidays. Merry Christmas to those who celebrate. Have a happy New Year. And stay safe, everybody. Peace.
Peace, guys.